Welcome to the Data Life podcast. This is Sanket and I welcome you to another episode. Whenever you go and talk with people about projects in machine learning, there are a few essential topics or questions that come up. These questions can also be important for interviews for data scientist or machine learning engineer positions. So in this episode, I will cover the 10 essential machine learning questions. I feel that a good grasp of these 10 questions can put you in a big way to answering most of the machine learning questions coming your way. A few disclaimers before we start. This list is by no means exhaustive. There can be several more questions that can be added here. Also, my answers for these questions are for baseline reference only. Please refer to textbooks for complete accuracy of various topics. Also, I feel that all these questions can be answered from a very basic way all the way to very advanced and nuanced. The answer will depend on your level of experience. So without further ado, let's get started. So the first question is, what is underfitting and overfitting and how to avoid it? The baseline answer for this could be something like, underfitting is the machine learning model being too simplistic. An underfit model has high bias. To avoid underfitting, you can use a more complex model such as neural network. You can try to have more features if possible. So feature engineering can be very useful here to help the model learn better. Ideally, you will want to add completely unrelated new features to provide more signals for model to understand the underlying pattern. More training data will not help in case of underfitting as it is the model being too simplistic that is an issue. As for overfitting, it means that the model is memorizing the data too much, even the noise. Overfit model has high variance. For an overfit model, you can use regularization such as dropout in neural networks. Dropout basically shuts down a fraction of neurons randomly to make neural network more robust in its learning. For shallow models, you can use L1 or L2 regularization. L1 regularization encourages sparsity and it basically does feature selection for you. L2 regularization basically tries to reduce the parameters, kind of reduce the value of the parameters, but it kind of allows all features to exist. So it depends on the trade-off, it depends on your application. You can try to reduce the number of features or use more training data for removing overfitting. So in this case, more training data will be very useful when the model is overfitting. The next thing would be, I guess, is to think about how to identify if a model is overfitting or underfitting. And I guess the easiest way is to just see if validation error is similar to training error or not. If they are very similar, it typically would mean higher bias. But if training error is very low and validation error is very high, that would mean that it's high variance or overfitting. For more details on this, please refer to week 6 of Andrew Young's machine learning course on Coursera. It gives an excellent overview of all the tips and techniques needed to prevent overfitting and underfitting. The link would be in the show notes. So the next question is, what is the difference between batch gradient descent, stochastic gradient descent, and mini batch gradient descents? When will you use each one of them? So kind of the baseline answer here would be that the batch gradient descent uses the entire training data for a weight update. Stochastic gradient descent uses only one data point for a weight update. So for every new data point that you see, you will update the weights. And for mini batch, you will use something like 128 or 256 examples for a weight update. Stochastic gradient descent is random, noisy, but fast. Batch gradient descent is very slow. Mini batch is best of both worlds. Mini batch gradient descent efficiently uses the vectorization benefit of GPUs that can handle 128 or 256 examples, but it kind of actually exactly depends on the RAM as well. Higher RAM means you can fit more training examples in one batch efficiently. For online learning case, when you are actually trying to continuously learn and update the model based on user activity, stochastic gradient descent is great, as it allows for weight update after every training data point. Typically, deep learning models are trained on GPUs kind of offline and only used online to perform predictions. In this case, mini-batch gradient descent works best. If you're dealing with hundreds and thousands of training examples, even a million or more, batch gradient descent is very, very slow. So you would want to do something like take a chunk of training data and then do the weight updates. So for that, mini-batch gradient descent is great. It also efficiently uses the vectorization benefit of GPUs. So the mini-batch gradient descent works really well, basically. If you do not have a lot of training data, then batch gradient descent would be, I guess, great because you're seeing the entire data before a weight update. So if you can actually afford it and if it is not too slow for you, then I guess go for it. Andrew Young also goes more into details about this in his deep learning course on Coursera. So for the first question, I mentioned the machine learning course by him. For this question, I'm going to refer to the deep learning course by him where he talks about these trade-offs. Now for the next question, how to choose a machine learning model? So this is a very, very high level question and I think a lot of people tend to just ask it to try to understand how you think about approaching model selection. So there can be various ways to answer this question. This is the baseline answer basically, which is that you need to think about whether your training data is labeled or not. If it is labeled, then you would go into the supervised learning models. If it is not labeled, you would kind of go into the unsupervised learning models. Also, you can think about using things like generative adversarial networks or reinforcement learning networks and stuff like that. Like there are all these different kinds of models, but to keep things simple, you would compare between supervised or unsupervised models. You would also think about offline versus online. So essentially, will your model be trained offline and then used in prediction, or whether it needs to be updated every time a user uses your model and then you want to update the weights. So that would be offline versus online. You also need to think about explainability. So do you want the user to understand why the model is giving an answer that it is? In that case, you would typically be mostly using things like decision trees because they're very, very highly explainable. Neural networks do not have a high level of explainability. So that is one of their cons. Also, you need to think about the amount of training data available. Now you will try a bunch of different models. You will choose the one that generalizes the best to your problem. You will build lots of learning curves to see if you have enough training data. So learning curve will actually tell you what is the difference between your training error and validation error. And that will allow you to see what is the level of bias and variance in your model. And hence it will allow you to see if you want more training data or less. For estimating the best possible metric, you will want to calculate the Bayes error, which is theoretically the minimum error possible for data. Andrew Young has a great explanation for this again in his deep learning course on Coursera, where he talks about how human error is a proxy for Bayes error, and for every machine learning problem, it is important to know this. So for some problem, even 90% accuracy can be really good if humans themselves are only at 85%. So this is the kind of a point that I have not seen discussed much in literature or in video courses, and I feel it is very important. It is important to kind of know like what is the baseline metric for you and what you should be really pleased about. A lot of people would try to go for 100% accuracy, and I think that has become a very common theme in a lot of the blog posts. But a more kind of nuanced approach here would be to actually know like whether there are any problems in the data set and the training data, and whether it is even possible for a human to achieve a certain level of accuracy. If it's even hard for a human to do something, it might be hard for a model to do it as well. Question number 4. How to improve the latency of a machine learning model in production? So essentially, this is about how to make sure that your model is very fast wherein the users actually use it. And I guess like the answer to this question is dependent more about understanding the prediction time for a model and not the training time. So even though a neural network is like very slow to train, we need to think about how fast or slow it would be during prediction time. Another thing from an engineering point of view that can be done is to cache the results so that the most popular queries are already in your database and you don't need to actually run the model again and again to find the answer to the questions that users have already asked. So this way you don't need to run the model again and again. So essentially, like, this way you can improve the latency of a machine learning model in production. Question number 5 is, if your training and cross-validation accuracies are high, but testing accuracy is less, how would you debug this? So this is a nice question because kind of the literature assumes that cross-validation data and testing data is from the same distribution, but it is possible that they are not. So a classic example of this would be, say, you have trained your model to work really well on HD images, and your cross-validation data is also for HD images, and you're getting like a really high performance. But this model is deployed and used by users with very weak data connections on their mobile phones. So the images that they're loading is very blurry. So your kind of your machine learning model might not perform that well there. So your testing data is coming from a different distribution than your cross-validation data set. This is something I covered in my earlier podcast on 3 mistakes to avoid in a machine learning project. Another thing that could be happening is that number of examples could be very small. So if your testing data set only has like 5 examples, it is just possible by chance that accuracy is very less. We'll be back right after this break. Welcome back. So now the next question is, name 3 hyperparameters. Why can't we train them as parameters? Why should only humans set them? So for neural network, like, a few hyperparameters would be learning rate, regularization parameters such as dropout, number of hidden layers, number of epochs, and so on. The main reason only humans should set the hyperparameters is to avoid overfitting. Otherwise, while training, the model is just going to choose the hyperparameter which is just best to memorize the training data. We just want to tune the hyperparameter based on a cross-validation data set to be able to generalize the model as well as possible. Question number 7 is, which metric should be used to evaluate a classifier? How do you connect it to business value? So this question is important because it is again important as an engineer to know how to evaluate a classifier. So accuracy is not best for skewed classes. So if your data has 98% positive and 2% negative labels, a classifier predicting all data is positive will come out as 98% accurate. So in this case, something like F-score is better as it balances both precision and recall. So in the case where the data is 98% positive and 2% negative, the recall will be 0 for the negative labels if the model is only predicting all data to be positive. So this will give you a good sign of how a model is performing. So the next part of the question was the business value of a machine learning model, right? So it is important to also think about how to evaluate a model based on a business metric. So is it possible to use things like click-through rate or conversions? So sometimes accuracy might not be enough because sometimes when you're building like ranking or recommendation systems, you would want to show that the model is able to bring back items which have highest click-through rates in the past. So the basic knowledge of these things can also be very important when you're talking with people about this. So the next question is, question number 8 is, what prevents someone to select deep learning model for everything? Again, I think this is an important question because I think deep learning models have become really good to solve almost a bunch of different problems. But I think there are 2 main things that can prevent us to choose deep learning model for everything. One is explainability. So this was something we talked about in an earlier question as well, is whether you want the end user or the client to know how you achieved an answer. So this is particularly important for the finance industry where you're trying to tell if someone deserves a credit card or not. So you would want to explain to that user why he or she is not getting the credit card. But if it is, say, optimizing what items to show the users on an Amazon webpage, maybe it is not that important to explain why you got an answer. the way you did. So it depends on kind of the application. So explainability is very crucial. And the second part to this is availability of training data. So if your training data is not a lot, I think it's just best to use shallow models first. By shallow models, I mean things like logistic regression, support vector machines, or naive bias, and so on and so forth. Like, these can perform really well for very low training data. For neural network to work well, it is important for it to have a lot of training data. Also, if training time is very, very crucial for you. So if you want to try lots of different models, deep learning and neural network models can be very slow to train. So that can be another factor for you. So for simple tasks, logistic regression may be enough, and it does a great kind of trade-offs of a number of things. Decision tree can be also very good for explainability purposes, and it is also reasonably fast to train, as well as it doesn't need a lot of training data. So the next question kind of follows up on this, which is that, say you have to classify a lot of data, but you don't have lots of labeled training examples. How would you begin to solve this problem? How many training data points are actually needed? So this is the kind of question which tackles, again, a real-life situation where you just don't have any labeled examples at all. So how would you approach this problem, right? So so the baseline kind of answer for this would be is to get a very small training data labeled by humans. You could either have one human do it, or you could have like three humans label every example, and then you can take a majority vote, or you will only take the answer if all three agree. So there are like different kinds of techniques you could use depending on how accurate you want the data to be. And once you have the training data labeled, you can try and build a small model and see the performance. You can try to build a learning curve and see like whether extra data is needed or not. Overall, it never hurts to have more training data, but if the model is performing well as per acceptable business metrics, then you don't need to spend more resources and money to acquire more of the data. The next question and the final question, number 10, is, say you have a perfectly working machine learning model. How do you deploy this in production? How do you check if users actually like it? So, to kind of answer this question, you can talk about a bunch of things, but like one of the popular techniques in web engines, web search, or e-commerce websites is A/B testing. So you compare the performance and see if a ML model is indeed able to provide the effect that we want. So it kind of gets into the statistics of how to select the sample size and how to decide how long to run this experiment. We might also want to know the standard deviation typical of a metric, as well as the minimum detectable effect. So I'll talk more about this in a future podcast around statistics of A/B testing, but I think it's just a good tool to have in your repertoire. So these were the 10 essential questions in machine learning. Hope they were useful. If you found any value in them, please consider leaving a review in the iTunes store. That would be very good to kind of reach out to more people. And do you have any suggestions on what needs to be on this list? Tweet to me at Sanket107, that is Sanket107, or you can reach me via voice message on the anchor page of this podcast. You can also email me at Sanket@omnilens.com. Thanks for listening, and hope you enjoy the journey of exploring more machine learning questions, and wish you the very best ahead.